Doug Keck, welcome to Power and Witness.
It's great to be invited after all of these years. I've reached the pantheon.
You have. This is, and it's fitting. You've just retired, so you're at the power, the height of the power of your skills. So you retired from the president of EWTN, and you're still much very active. Tell us what you're doing now for the network.
Yeah, well, I stepped back from those responsibilities. And so back in the end of June of 2025. And so I'm continuing to do my bookmark show that I've been doing since 1997, 98. The Father Spitzer's Universe show, which is, we just celebrated our 10th anniversary of that. I'm also, I'm going to be picking up more episodes of the Catholic Sphere, which we've been doing for a few years, with a focus, for the most part, on theology, really kind of talking about what are the topics that are out there that people need some more information on. They hear the Pope say this, or they hear a story about that, and Colin Donovan and I basically do that program with a couple of guests brought in to be experts. And we're going to be able to do that on a weekly basis starting in February or March. I think it's going to start going to weekly when the new schedule rolls out. So in doing that, I also have been on for a long time on Teresa Tomeo's morning show, kind of talking on the inside word, kind of talking about what programming is and something new that's coming up. We also talk about a lot of times the news of the day, because Teresa comes out of the, you know, secular media as I did, and I started in radio news and worked on the startup of several regional news, television news services. And then lately, over the last year or so, when my buddy Al Creston and I had talked about me doing something on one of his, on his program actually, and then unfortunately Al passed away. And so Marcus, who has picked up that program, basically Ave, in the afternoon, Ave Maria in the afternoon. I do a segment on his show, sometimes talking about the book, Mark, I might have done, a lot of times having to do with topics that just are in the news, and he seems to be interested in my take on those things. I'm not sure why, but I'm happy to give them.
Yeah. And so you came to the network in 97?
Six,
okay.
Yep, July of 96.
One thing I find myself commenting more, I mean, I came in 94 and you had some lay evangelist out there, and I'm forgetting their name, like Dishrock and Peter.
You're talking about Carl Keating, Catholic Answers,
yeah.
And Pat Madrid, and
right,
we're doing right. That at the time, right? And Scott obviously was out there.
But it seems like it's just exploded, like with lay people, social media, YouTube.
Right.
I just feel like it hit me like some World Youth Days. I remember earlier on, I mean, this would have been like Madrid and Rio and stuff, but it was, you'd see like a secular press there covering it. Now you have this huge Catholic media cover, you know, a lot of devout people and just grab their camera stuff. But I really feel like it's like what Vatican II anticipated, this call to holiness, this call to evangelization, and largely it seems like the lay people are carrying the torch here.
Well, I think that's why Mother was ahead of the curve, because EWTN is a lay organization.
Right.
And its focus is not focused into the church, it's out in to the hinterlands, it's out into the places we're supposed to be reaching out to the average person, reaching out into the world. And that was the call of Vatican II, which was not to have everybody and his brother decide they needed to have some role up on the altar, but that you were supposed to live your faith in such a way that you felt confident enough to go out and live your faith and explain your faith in the world and to make the world a better place. I think sometimes we got lost in the idea of the difference between a ministry and an apostolate, really, where an apostle is really designed to go out into the community and into the public square, where ministry tends to be a little more focused internally into like the parish or an expanded parish level. And I think what we've seen recently over the last 30 years of more of that understanding of the apostolate, and going out and doing what lay people are called to do, which is to to the highways and byways and to reach the average person. Whether it's, you know, silently, they always like to misquote St. Francis about, you know, and then maybe use words.
Right. Preach
but,
always.
Sometimes. Yeah, preach always and sometimes use words when necessary. But yeah, living your life and doing that when you start at your family and a core out comes out from there. And it's very difficult because the society is not a society of, let's say, the 1950s, which was in general, you know, fairly Christian, Judeo-Christian in the way it tended to see things in general. From the 60s on, obviously, it flipped and became much different. And I think, so I think lay people are picking up the appropriate banners to do those things. And I think with the entrance into technology, with technology becoming so flat now, with the combination of it doesn't cost a lot of money to get basic equipment to record video. You can do it with your phone. People are shooting movies on high-end phones, basically. You know, so you get the entry level is not as expensive. There's not as many, you know, kind of people who control the entryway as well. You don't have to even get on EWTN to get your video seen. You can just post them on YouTube or TikTok or you know, Facebook or X or some other place, and at least get some traction. And so there's a lot more opportunities for people. So that is a very positive thing. On the downside, you have to be that much more suspect of what some things that are coming out because you don't know the basis or the background or the sophistication from a not from a technical sense, but from, let's say, a liturgical sense or a understanding, a theological sense of those things. And the other problem you run into is, you know, you've got a lot of people talking to themselves. And so, you know, a lot of podcasts or one podcaster interviewing another podcaster who interviewed another podcaster, you know. And the reality is, as the newness of that wears away, people are going to default. I believe the more choices you have, the fewer you want to make. And that's where EWTN is incredibly positioned to be that default, to be that place where you can go, which is why I think it's a wonderful idea, the expansion of the on-demand platform and the focus on the digital ability of reaching people and the fact that people will know at the end of the day, I can always go there. You know, I don't want to make all these choices, but I know I can trust EWTN. And I think having a brand you can trust is incredibly important today. I think that trust, as you probably know better than I, for young people is really where it's all at. People want something I can believe in. I hear what you're saying. I like what you're saying, but can I trust you? Right. I seem like I've ever so many times in society, whether it's the divorces in my family, it's the things I was told that would make me happy, or the scandals inside the church or inside the government, that all of these groups that I thought I could trust have let me down. Are you next? Can I risk that?
And maybe to some degree, I mean, that's maybe where the hierarchy, the priesthood could come in. I mean, certainly, you know, we've had radical priests grab a mic and say crazy stuff, but it seemed like long-term, wise, it seemed like their bishop or some bishop will eventually step in, you know, and so maybe the Catholic hierarchy can help with that too. But
well, I think that's always been, for all its flaws, the genius of having that hierarchical thing is that you do have the ability that people are at least accountable at some level to somebody. I think sometimes we wish they were more accountable than they had been in certain situations. Certainly with the sex scandal, I think a lot of people feel that way. But at least there's some level of having that. I think in many cases, it's far worse than many other places. It's just that you don't know about it because there's absolutely no accountability. So you never find out about it.
And it seems like, I've just noticed on a personal level, it's good to have someone tell you no every now and then, right?
Well, welcome to married life.
Right.
I mean, that is one of the great things of a marriage or life is the ability to have somebody who loves you, who says, I don't think this is a good idea. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or somebody that you're going to know you're going to have to account for. I mean, I said this one time. I'm not sure that my wife was thrilled about my conversation about this, but it was really meant, I think, for the right reason. But it was like when you go on a marriage encounter weekend, right? You have this thing where you're dialoguing, basically, mm-hmm. writing love letters to each other. I'm not telling tales out of school. That's what goes on. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're reading their thoughts and they're reading your feelings, not even mm-hmm. thoughts, your feelings. And you know they're going to respond to that. So you want to make sure it's clear. You want, so it's right. there's a dynamism there. There's a right. feedback loop that you have that's intense mm-hmm. and it makes you accountable. Now you go on a Curcio and it's you by yourself reading a book late at night, talking to God, that's a lot easier, I thought.
Yeah.
Because you don't have that same level of immediate accountability.
Right.
And I think the thing that is great to have the ability is that when you're doing anything that you're gonna stop and say to yourself, you know, how am I gonna explain this to somebody? Mm-hmm. You know, is this really the right thing for me to do? Now, if there's no accountability, or right. there's no downside, right. I don't even have to think about it. Just do whatever I want to do.
Right. Right.
But if there's a downside to my actions and behavior, I mean, so many times you say to people, you know, why would you blow up your whole family and your relationship and your wife for some, you know, fling or something
right.
that
right.
means nothing yeah. or, you know, yeah. is one bad weekend or something. And without having that accountability of knowing that, you know, I need to be able to live up to my promises right. and my vows.
Let me ask you, because you're out there for the network and you've had to, you know, decide on all kinds of content and everything. And I remember one time doing this podcast with Bishop Connolly from Lincoln. Mm-hmm. And he came out of that classics program at Kansas in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And so he was telling me about they had these three great teachers there that taught a classics program that just made it come alive for people. And I kept asking him, was it the content? He said, certainly, the content of these classics pieces of literature and art, poetry, whatever, was convicting to the students. But he said, basically, he was telling me it needed those gifted teachers mm-hmm. to present it. And like, so today, like, you have evangelization. We have supreme content, right? But it takes a person.
Yeah, we have the truth. I mean,
we have the truth.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah. But and it's got to be a blend, right, of talent to be able to present it. How do you see that talent, or how do you measure that talent in a person? Or?
Well, I guess my theory always was that you want to make it as interesting as possible without obscuring the truth. Okay, which means you don't want to water it down just to make it palatable. Not because that doesn't work in some place, but that's not your mission. You know, our mission should be, we're Catholic, we're straight up Catholic. There's plenty of Catholic lights, there's plenty of Christian light, and there's probably even some good secular Judeo-Christian kind of, you know, saints things that Martin Scorsese is doing on Fox, okay? But, you know, or the movie that was done on Mother Cabrini that they spent a ton of money on and lost their shirt on, but, you know, which really came out as, you know, she was a feminist and, you know, she was fighting the patriarchy, rather than the little movie we made that was all about her faith, okay? Now, our goal is to bring the truth and the lives of the saints in such a way that you learn why they did what they did and how they did what they did, so that, as Mother would say, you learn that being a saint isn't being perfect, mm-hmm. and that, you know, people struggle, even who were saints. And so I think everybody has a certain mission, and our mission, I think, is to be strong and solid and make sure that people, when they come to us as a touchstone of what's going on in the universe, in the world, that it's a way of understanding what the truth is. You know, we don't expect people to live only on EWTN. We expect Catholics live in the world. So we don't need a Catholic sports channel. You go watch ESPN, that's fine. You know, you want a news thing, go find a news channel that you think is fine. That's good, we have news. You wanna check it out, that's great. You wanna find out what the church teaches and you heard some goofy story on CNN, well, that's where you can go to our news team or go to EWTN and find out as a touchstone. But it doesn't have to become some sort of inward, you know, separation from society, right. because our goal is to impact society, not to be controlled by it, but impact it. And I think that's where, you know, our mission as EWTN is to make it sure that, you know, when I want Catholicism, I go to EWTN. Mm-hmm. If I want to be entertained, I go to the Family Channel maybe or some other channel. And it's not to say that you don't want it to be better, but make sure as you're making it more entertaining and interesting, you're not losing the impact of what you're putting out there. Right. And as much as you want to read people in the highways and the byways, what I would say to you, Father, is if that's our call all the time, why do you waste your time talking to the same people every day at Mass?
Yeah.
Why aren't you out, you know, carousing the bars late at night? Well, that's probably not a good idea. But, you know, out there preaching the gospel on the street corner.
Yeah.
But it's because everybody has a different mission. Mm-hmm. And EWTN's mission is to be straight and Catholic and be there for you. Your mission is to make sure that these people get the sacraments. And there's other people and other missionaries and evangelists whose calling is to be reaching out to the peripheries.
Right. And it is, it's been great to see like these news stories we've all read about bigger OCIA classes. Mm-hmm. You know, we just, the Texas saying.
Let me ask you a question. Why did they change it from RCIA as a right to OCIA?
It's everything I could do just to remember OCIA. I have no idea where they
okay.
Yeah, I don't know those.
Oh, the CIA, yeah.
Right. But yeah, the chaplain from the Texas A&M, they just had a big spike. I think they had 260, including guys, people just coming back to get confirmed or whatever.
But it's probably because they're members of the SEC now. I think that's really what,
yeah.
That's really why.
They've been blessed by that. But, it is. I mean, it's wonderful to see. I mean, I one level I see, I mean, what you typically hear, what this priest was telling me was that, you know, young people are looking for something solid, tradition, mm-hmm. something that didn't seem as in flux, you know, and interesting too, like more men are coming to Catholicism, which
right.
to me really got my attention because, you know, you go to any mass, any daily mass, there's more women than men. Mm-hmm. It's like women have this quickness to the faith and the spiritual bent to them that more easily takes that. But the men that really, and I always felt that too. It seemed like the men went bad first in our culture and treated people as objects or whatever, toxic masculinity in the sense of violence and war and the sexual revolution. You know, those architects for men putting this forth, they could get what they wanted and all that kind of stuff. But it seems like women now, I always feel like the male charism part of it is leadership, right? And like they're going to be on the forefront of really changing the culture. Women certainly spiritually by their prayer life and everything. But men have to really lead mm-hmm. in this time. And so it seems like finally maybe we've hit some kind of bottom that is young men are being awakened.
Well, I think, you know, I think some of the things that men were accused of for many years were true. I also think there was an over-exaggeration mm-hmm. of, you know, suddenly you put a pejorative in front of any name, it makes it a negative, you know.
Right.
Yeah, far right.
Right.
You know,
right.
Toxic masculinity.
Right, right.
Well, what does that mean? Yeah. I mean, I understand you don't want Mr. Machismo treating women as objects.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, when you watch the culture today, you shouldn't be surprised over the fact that there's so many gender confusing things because you basically have movies that are out there now where basically the women have taken on what would normally be seen as a more male role, mm-hmm. not only in a leadership thing, but inside of like a superhero or somebody, yeah. or even, you know, you watch a detective show or things like that on television. And I always say to myself, now I could believe that lady detective's the smartest detective in the building. Mm-hmm. She's probably the nicest detective in the building. She's probably the hardest working detective in the building, but I don't think she's probably the fastest or the strongest.
Right.
But yet, in these episodes, you know, you'll see this demure woman, you know, taking on some hulking guy and, you right. know, dispatching right. him right. with nothing. And it just is, it's just a misunderstanding of the culture because it's trying to make up for the fact yeah. that we live in a complementary world where our goal is not compete with each other, but complement each other. Doesn't mean we lord it over each other or that one person can't be more one way than the other. But yeah, I think men are reacting to, in a sense, kind of saying, well, where's our place?
Yeah.
All we hear about is how bad it is to be a guy. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the only guys that are acceptable is either Jimmy Pajamas or a gay guy. I mean, if you look at a male in most of the television programs over the years, especially those from England, but other places, the only guy who usually turns out to be decent is the gay guy.
Right.
Or it turns out that you didn't know he was gay, but he really is gay. And that's why he was a nice guy. And if you see a guy who seems like the regular husband type, it'll turn out he's really not so good.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of young men looking for, like you said, their truth. They're looking for something to connect to.
Yeah.
And obviously, Jesus was a man. The apostles for the majority, obviously the apostles themselves were men. And I think men also are tend to be more logical in a sense that we tend to be looking towards how is this going to work out?
Yeah.
How do we make this, how do we fix this?
Yeah.
Where women are more empathetic and sympathetic.
Yeah, right.
And that's wonderful. But I think sometimes even in our culture, we see the downside of that, where I think there are times where our laws and the way they're being instituted are a little too overly empathetic or a little too sympathetic and a little too much on the axis of mercy without enough side of justice.
Right.
And I think you see the downside of that when those things get out of balance. And I think men bring that back into balance in a sense to say, like as a husband in any relationship, to say, yes, yeah, hon, I hear what you're saying and stuff like that. But we can't allow that.
Yeah,
I mean, I love them too, but we got to say no because this is not going to end well. And I know that doesn't make you feel good now, but that's in a sense what a man's role is to do.
Yeah, I think the men respond too, like to have a cause, to have a project, to have a solution. You see all the chaos and everything.
Right.
They want to
fix
be
it.
Part of that.
Yeah. And that's where guys run into problems many times when they're dealing with women, which is a woman is telling you something and you're sitting there trying to figure out, well, how can I fix this and make this so it's not a problem? When it's not, that's not what the issue is. A person just wants to be listened to.
Yeah.
And that's the toughest thing sometimes for men to realize is that your wife is telling you this, not to fix it, but to just be able to tell you.
Right.
Because that's what a woman does.
Yeah.
And guys, we get caught up in trying to, what did we do? They used to call marriage kind of, listening with your motor running. All right, I got what you said. I already got the solution for you. Just let me know when I can jump in and give you the solution.
Now, I think that it's interesting too, like thinking about the EWT and audience, like moving forward, because traditionally we've had like an older audience, but now I'm wondering if more young people are coming in, just into Catholicism. And the other thing too, it's been, I think a factor for these young people too is that they had a bad experience of the church. I mean, I kind of grew up hearing, well, the nuns were mean and they would hit you with the rulers and all this kind of stuff. So they're just kind of like...
Yeah, and we just ended up as the best educated generation that the United States has ever seen.
Right.
Highest education levels.
Wow.
For those sisters
who
were teaching 50 kids at a time.
Oh, yeah.
With high school educations themselves.
Right. Yeah, I think about that too. I mean, just they're doing the unsung heroes of the formation.
Oh, absolutely. And there was always, it was their, a sister out there who was a little, off kilter. But, you take anybody, you're going to find people who could be off kilter.
All right. But like in terms of, a lot of young people, it's like they haven't been, some of them haven't been raised into anything, right? So this is all new and fresh. They have no prejudices so much against it or whatever. And so it's like this new kind of openness that's surprising, isn't it? It's
well, I think it probably does surprise them because they've been led to believe that the truth doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And then when all of a sudden they start to realize, well, what do you mean? That there is something that's actually true, that Jesus Christ is truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that as I get closer to this truth, I get hungrier and I want to be fed more and I'm more and more interested with these things. Yeah, it's like you know, they walked into, you know, they were living in a vacuum, and suddenly they stepped out of the vacuum and realized, oh, wow, it's not just this nothing, this ennui, virtual world that doesn't exist. It isn't really real. The people aren't real. The images aren't real. And you know, so many people are lose hope, and God gives you hope, and God gives you, you know, that ability to deal with society. I think, as Groeschel used to say, you know, he say, psychology's job isn't to fix your problems, to help you cope with your problems. Mm. You know, in a lot of ways, in some ways, your faith does that too. It's not that you become a disciple of Jesus and your life is wonderful, and if it's not, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
It's that, no, it helps you deal with those things.
Yeah.
It makes it easier for you to have a sense of the great Catholic insight of redemptive suffering, mm-hmm. and that suffering does have meaning. It's not meaningless.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking of Catherine Doherty, who talked about that we can, she wondered sometimes about how could we could be running to therapy and everything just to remove the cross. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to bear some kind of cross. And,
right.
And sometimes this isn't going to change.
Well, I always think it's interesting that everybody understands that if you want to play on the football team, you better get in shape and work out with the team. And, you know, most of us would rather not do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot easier not to do that. But if you don't do it, you won't be prepared to play.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to suffer at some amount, almost in anything, studying, you know, for school or whatever it happens to be. And what we all know is that it's those things that we work on.
Mm-hmm.
And when we succeed at those that mean the most to us. I remember a guy who was very good sports. He was a, you know, professional sports guy. Was talking about his daughter going to college and or moving out one way or the other. And she was going through her stuff. And she's taking a couple of these, you know, trophies. And these other ones she was throwing away. He said, well, what are you doing? She said, well, I'm taking the ones that I actually won. Not the ones that I got because I happen to be on the team,
right.
or I happen to be in the league, you know, the participation trophies. Because we all know, everybody knows, you know. One time when Matt Keck got a cup from something in a special ed thing he was doing, he said, why did I get this? I'm not good at this. Why did they give me a cup?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's the same thing. The things we fight for, and those are the things you step back and say, I accomplished that.
Right.
Okay, I did something for my family, for myself, that I can feel good on, rather than, you know, the idea like, well, you don't need to do anything and you're just okay. Well, you know what? I know I'm not okay. Yeah. You can think I'm okay, but I know what the truth is about
me. Right. You know, in the church, it's like the first job of the mission of the church is to proclaim the gospel, right? And call people to faith. They receive the sacrament.
You would think.
And sometimes I think, too, with Mother Angelica, you know, she came out on a live show and talked to people. And I remember thinking one day, I said, how is preaching going to survive? I mean, if we're so used to glitzy media productions that just grab you and shake you up and it's all real exciting and all this kind of stuff. But I think what I've just noticed over the years is people want some attention. They want you to pay attention. They want you to listen. They want you to talk to them.
Right.
I've been told that sometimes as a priest. Sometimes they say, well, you just... And I don't always do this, but one time I did or something. She said, you just talk to us, like it was in a homily.
Right.
And it kind of struck me the way she said that. So I think with our faith, and I think Mother did it so well, that connected to people was just to talk to them.
Well, I think the reason Mother connected was because she was coming out of her own experience of pain and things like that. So she was not coming from a pie in the sky, nor was she talking down to people, nor was she talking to people with the idea like, oh, here's my 3-point solution to your problem or my 5-point solution to your problem. Mm-hmm. And Mother always struck me in a sense very Christ-like in the way that she had incredible mercy and patience for people who were struggling and suffering, and absolutely no patience for people who should know better.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If you're in a situation and you should know better,
yeah.
I'm not going to give you a pass. I'm going to call you on that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, realizing people are suffering out there.
Yeah.
You need to meet them where they're suffering. But the issue is the encounter is not the end of the experience. It's the beginning of the experience. It's not, oh, I encounter you, you're suffering, I'm suffering with you, I feel your pain, you feel my pain. Okay, that's good. It's like, no, how do we move you out of that situation? How do we move your faith along, your life along in such a way to see if that can relieve some of the angst or issues that you have in your life?
Yeah.
Not this idea just that sometimes gets out there that says, you know, you hear, well, God loves you just the way you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. But then you'd say, well, he loves you too much to leave you there. Well, it's like a parent. Your kid's a drug addict, okay? You got to make some tough decisions on how to deal with them. Doesn't mean you don't love them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You don't stop loving your child. But it doesn't mean that you can't be in a situation at some point of a violent situation or just say, you can't be here.
Right.
Okay? You have to change your way. I love you just the way you are internally, but your actions are not permissible. And I think in a way, that's the way we deal with the Lord. And I think in telling people that, yes, there's people who don't feel loved. There's also people who I think get confused over the idea that, you know, well, God's all merciful and he understands. And, you know, so why should I really worry about this? And then they wonder why sometimes in a heart, why people don't pay attention.
Yeah.
Or it seems like these are important things and these suddenly aren't important things. Well, if these things aren't important because I'm misunderstanding scripture, then how do I know that these things that you're saying are important actually are important?
Right.
Jesus didn't really say these things about these particular people. Well, then maybe he didn't say these other things about helping people. You know, it's not, you know, our Lord did not decide to set up a food kitchen.
Right.
You know, he wants you to do that. That's great. But he didn't come here to do that.
Yeah.
And he said the poor will always be with you. Mm-hmm. Because how do you get rid of the poor? Because it's like fair. How do you make everything fair?
It's impossible. I hear a little bit of a New Yorker in you coming up.
It's impossible.
You guys are grinding your way through reality. But I think that's a great point, though. But yeah, she didn't come and give this step-by-step life hack about how to make your life better. Because these things, some things are going to hit in our life, right? They're not going to get better in a worldly sense, right? So, but she's reminding us of God's love for us, that he's present in our life.
Right.
And that he uses this suffering. I think of some of the lessons like I took from her because as a young brother, I just remember thinking, all right, we get it. You know, you struggle with anger. You know, she talked a lot about that.
That was something she struggled with.
Right. And then later in my life, it's like, I'm still struggling with the same things. You know, some same things I entered with, right? So, yeah, mother had these struggles, right? Or just like these things that are, yeah, we get sad or depressed or we struggle, we grieve over a loss, but that Jesus.
Well, I hope
is
you
there.
Grieve over a loss.
Yeah.
If you're not sad over something, it's like, you know, people say a Catholic guilt trip. Well, if you're not guilty about something that you shouldn't have done,
right.
Then you're a sociopath.
Yeah.
Now, you don't want to wallow in it,
yeah.
But if you don't have any pangs of conscience over things you shouldn't be doing,
right,
you're
right.
in trouble.
And just like her, how often, I mean, she talked about just how God can use our suffering. You know, she built a network with the back pain, the crutches, and asthma, just a myriad of different issues. You know, and combined with prayer, you know, God does great things. He draws this great fruitfulness. But what are some of the lessons that struck you, maybe things she said or on her show?
Well, I always used to say if I had all the problems mother had physically, I'd never get out of bed.
You pointed out to me, too, that, you know, she started the network at 58.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who's going to take on a network?
Well, that's the thing. Well, it's somebody who has a call, somebody who knows they're being called to do something. And I think one of the things is to realize we're all being called and that the biggest trick in my life in understanding that was when I went out to Curcio and I had an image of myself standing in a room and I was in this room and the shades were down. And I finally said, you know, what's outside? and I lifted up the shades, and all the sun came pouring in. And I realized all this time the sun was always there, but I had pulled the shades down, and I wasn't paying attention. And once you start paying attention to God in your life and listening and being open to listening, you'll hear him. A lot of us don't want to hear him. I mean, the joke used to be about marriage encounter was the reason you couldn't get guys on the thing was because they didn't want to change. Their big fear was, I'm going to have to change something. I'm going to go on this thing and suddenly I can't play golf, or I can't do this, or I can't do that, or I can't go fishing. Whatever it is, I'm going to have to change. It's that fear of change as to what I'm trying to avoid. Right. But I think it's just that idea that, as she said, she had a mission. She might have had a giant mission. Maybe you got a very small mission. Too much is given, much is expected. Right. But you know, our Lord gave different numbers of talents to different people, right? He didn't care that he only gave you three talents, you came back with three talents. What he cared about is that you use the talents he gave you, not bury them and then come back and give them the same thing. Obviously, that was the problem. Yeah. But he also gave different people different amounts of talents. And that's the way it is in the world. We can't judge ourselves by other people. Mm-hmm. We have to look and say, what is the mission I've been given in my life? My mission, you know, I used to always say that, you know, in the past, being a good parent, being a good father, meaning I go to work and I put bread on the table and I put a house over my family, that's a good man. You're a success. Not, well, how many cars do you have, or how many things you do, and how much money are you making, are you going to Europe this year? That was a success. A mother who could raise her family, her kids, and take care of her kids, and nurture her children, and make sure that they were, you know, they were clothed, and they were bathed, and they got to school. That was a wonderful, that was a great mother. You know what I mean? We've allowed the world to distort what we believe is important and what was successful. And it's when you listen to God's, you know, that quiet, still quiet voice, and you hear that, then you realize these other things really are not that important and are totally ephemeral. They're here and then they're gone. Yeah. You know, you did this, you did this. Nobody cares. You know, who cares?
Right.
You know, the people who care are the people you love or you care about. Right. And I always think about, you know, when we think about people important, you think about poor Mother Angelica, you know, and, you know, hobbling around, but people, you know, find her leadership, her love. Mm-hmm. Look at Mother Teresa, craggly looking people. Mm-hmm. You know, God uses the most unusual, uses children, mm-hmm. Uses people with special needs mm-hmm. to reach people to the level that you can't reach normally.
Yeah.
He always uses the things you don't think. The things the world thinks are important,
yeah.
I can guarantee, you can almost guarantee, are the last things that God thinks is important. Mm-hmm. Even with the Pharisee, it's like, you know, and the tax collector. The tax collector, you know, I mean, the Pharisee didn't necessarily have a lot of money.
Yeah.
He just thought he was wonderful because of how wonderful he was. Where the tax collector at least understood he was doing stuff that was wrong mm-hmm. and that he was trying to deal with that.
He went away justified.
Right, yeah. Right. Because of that.
Yeah.
And so.
God uses the weak to confound the strong.
Right, absolutely.
Well, I know you've got to run. You've got someone you got to pick up there, so I'll let you go. But thanks for talking with me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Anytime. Mm-hmm.